Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
This is Red Sox Review, and it starts right now. Here's your host, Cooper Boardman, on WEEI.
Wow. How about it? That's a win, folks. That's a 2-1 win. Gets the Tampa Bay Rays tonight. Tropicana Field. Wow. There's just a little bit of surprise in my voice, right? I mean, shoot. Again, you know, you look at it tonight from the Red Sox perspective, this is a 2-1 game. This is a tight game throughout the night. You know, you're down early. They come back. They tie the game. You come back, you tie the game, you get one in the eighth inning, and you win the game 2-1 against the Tampa Bay Rays. It's a win that had to happen, honestly. All right, let's get you to the manager, Alex Cora, to start the night. Then we'll get to your calls. Red Sox Review live with you. Cooper Boardman, Jacob Lassner, 617-779-7937, 617-779-7937, text line at 37937. But here's Alex Cora. His team wins 2-1 over the Rays tonight.
Kenley obviously is battling through something there, but what did it mean for the bullpen to give you what they gave you, five innings?
Oh, it was huge. We knew coming in that Tanner was going to be around 60 pitches. That's what we got. We got the double play, and then Coop did a good job. And then from there, you know, it was the three big guys, right? So, I mean, Penrod did an outstanding job, too. So, much-needed win. You know, we got a chance to win the series tomorrow, so we'll be ready.
What was going on with Kenley?
He's been dealing with some shoulder stuff, you know, and it felt like, you know, he was kind of like favoring or whatever you want to call it. I checked with him. He's like, I'm good to go. So we'll know more tonight or tomorrow, and we'll see where we're at.
Could you have imagined a circumstance in which he would have let you take him out of the game, one out from a save?
No.
Story, obviously, like, you know.
But we talk about the athlete. You know, we turned a nice little play, 5-6-3. Cassis did a good job at first two and 3-6-3. You know, the homer, the stolen bases, that's the player we envision, you know. We just got to keep it on the field.
I mean, you've talked at different times about missing him. Like, how rare is it to have that kind of dynamism?
There's not too many like that, and if you start looking at the defensive numbers, you know, they're getting up there, right? And that's what we envision. Obviously, it didn't happen, but, you know, the total package. And swing-wise, a lot different than last year, right? At this time last year, he was swinging and missing a lot. Now he's hitting the ball the other way, obviously driving the ball the last few days. So he's in a good spot. And like I said, when we got him, whatever we get offensively, we'll take it. But I'll take the athlete any day of the week.
Knowing that Tanner was going to be limited, how you say, what do you think about the sharpness and what he was able to give you?
Good stuff. Yeah, good stuff. Backdoor breaking ball that stayed in the middle of the plate, but he used to split down in the zone below. The sinker had some velo and movement, so he was good.
Is he kind of shutting keep going the season?
As of now, yes. Yes, so we'll see how he feels tomorrow, and we'll keep running.
Speaking of tomorrow, have you figured
Bayo.
Out?
Bayo tomorrow.
And Fitz Friday?
Most likely.
All right, there you go. The manager, Alex Cora, again, after the victory tonight, 2-1 against the Tampa Bay Rays. You know, it's funny. Just we've done this over and over and over again. You know, I like we have heard Alex Cora so much on this show again and again and again. And you just hear, you know, the last few nights, like, you want to reach through his audio and, like, give him a hug just based on what's been going on with this team. So it was nice to hear a happy Alex Cora. The Red Sox did a lot tonight, you know, of what they have not done. And I think that there is value in looking at what Zach Penrod did tonight, who is a wonderful story in terms of working his way back, to being the kind of guy that, you know, can be from independent baseball to a guy that can be, you know, a genuine contributor to a major league bullpen. That's the one. Cooper Criswell, who has been a legitimate swing man, who they spent $1 million on in the offseason, that has been well worth it. We know what Justin Slayton has been from a Rule 5 perspective. And, you know, some of the biggest adventures of the night came late, including Kenley, who ends up with his 27th save by stranding the bases loaded with a strikeout of Logan Driscoll. And, you know, I, this has not been the kind of year to be trumpeting what this bullpen is. This bullpen has been really not good for a very long time, you know, really since when you date back to the All-Star break. And from that point on, they've been the third worst, second worst, first worst baseball, bullpen in baseball by pretty much any stretch of the imagination, by any metric you want to use, whether you go ERA or whatever it is. But, you know, we talked about this the other night. What do the best bullpens in baseball do? What do the Mariners do? What have the Dodgers done? What have all of these teams done? You know, the answer is they have created homegrown guys. And Zach Penrod tonight's a great example of that. Justin Slayton is ultimately a good example of that. And you mix it in with the higher paid guys, the Blake Trinans of the world, and so on and so forth. And tonight, that's a good cocktail. Tonight, the bullpen was good. It has not been true for a lot of the year. It is true once again tonight. All right. Red Sox review. Let's open it up now. 617-779-7937. 37937 on the text line. Cooper Boardman here with you. And let's go to Chris. Chris in Newburyport, you are on the air. Welcome to Red Sox review.
Hello there. How are you?
I'm not bad. How you doing, Chris?
Excellent. Excellent. We'll take the win. We need 8 more minimum. Probably that still doesn't get it done. I've been the biggest cheerleader all year. I love the youth. I love the movement for next year. I was hot on their offense March and April. I tried to convince every single person I know to put something, even a tiny little tickle on the Sox to win the World Series. I was a laughing stock. I got them at 18,500 to win the World Series for 500. So that's I loved them. The pitching has been the biggest disappointment, but I got to tell you, we understand that. I'm going to say one thing, it won't be popular, and then I'll let you go. Devers needs to sit. I'm so done with him. I have never seen anybody take so many pathetic, half-hearted swings outside of the strike zone. We know he's hurt. You're not going to get a medal at the end of the year for being a martyr. Sit him. If he can't swing a bat, sit him. We got 4 guys in the minors that are better than him right now. And I really, really believe over the last month he's hurt us. I'm not going to drill down into all the stats, but I've watched more games this year than I ever have in my life. And I just cannot believe the quality of his at-bats with guys in scoring position night after night after night. Strikeouts, out of the zone, weak ground balls. If he can't play, he can't play. I'm so done with him.
Yeah.
And welcome, Patrick. Welcome, Patrick. What's his name? Who's coming from the Orioles? We need that kid. What's his name? Corbin Burns. That's the latest rumor. I'll take Corbin Burns. I'll take anybody. The Red Sox need to spend money. They have more money than anybody in baseball to spend in this coming offseason. If they don't spend money, I'll never watch them again.
Sure.
All right, thanks.
Yeah, no, thank you, Chris. Felt like we let him run there. Sounded like it felt good. Corbin Burns would be great. You know, the Raffy conundrum is exactly that. This is a great player, and I there are a lot of arguments that come to a head when we talk about Rafi right now, right? And people call in, and I've had this conversation again and again and again. And I can sit here and say Rafi's a great player, and I promise you the next call is going to be Rafi stinks, you know, whatever. 617-779-7937, by the way. You know, that and whatever, like, you want to sit there and make that your point and the hill you want to die on. I'm not going to go there with you. That's not even the point that Chris is making, just to be clear. You know, what Chris is saying there is what a lot of people have said, which is if Rafi is unwell, if Rafi is legitimately hurt, what are we doing here, right? And I will offer the Red Sox argument, which is, you know, this is somebody that whatever he is fighting through, and I'm going to choose to believe, and just based on people that we've talked to and based on the conversations we've had with people around the team, that he is absolutely fighting not only through something, you know, in the shoulder, but fighting through something very significant, you know, injury wise here as he goes down the stretch of this season. If that is really true, you know, what is he doing in there every single day? And the Red Sox would say that they think that they can help him, that he can help them. It's not really that much more complicated than that. They would say that, you know, what he did in New York, not only the Gerrit Cole ball four heard around the world, but the three hits and the three singles there. You know, the three-hit night against Baltimore at home, the hit the night after. But yeah, Rafi doesn't have an extra base hit since September 7th. The idea that he is, you know, worse than everybody, you know, than anybody that they could bring up, I reject that. But I'm starting to get there too, right? Like, especially at this juncture of the season, like, what are we doing? Why is he out there every single night? You know, why not a night off? At a minimum, but, you know, 0-for-4 with 3 Ks tonight, and there have been a lot more of those than the positives that I've mentioned. And, you know, you are absolutely starting to get to that point, especially, you know, I also think there's value in seeing what, like, Manuel Valdez can give you on a day-to-day basis down the stretch of this season, because he's going to be in a legitimate second-base competition probably going into next year. You know, that's going to be open among those four guys with Campbell, and Grissom and Valdez and Sogard and, you know, whoever else I'm not mentioning, right? Rafael is probably in that conversation as well. So I don't disagree, you know, but they clearly think that he can help them in some way. I mean, it's just not manifesting in front of us. All right, 617-779-7937. 617-779-7937. Text line at 37937. Let's go to New Hampshire again. AJ, welcome back to Red Sox Review.
How's it going?
I'm all right. What you got?
Not too much. I'm so glad that you didn't try to overblow this win and get too ecstatic about it, because we are where we are right now. So I'm not big into revisionist history, but how would you think this turned out if, you know, I feel like without Alex Cora and the Puerto Rican connection, I'm wondering how that Correa would have fit into the Sox as opposed to Trevor Story the year that they were all on the market, all the shortstops. And I was actually pulling for them to sign him. Also, I just I want to know what you thought about that. And again, I was wanting to know what you think about maybe is the window closed to bring up anybody from AAA on the expanded roster, or is it set now that you can't bring anyone up?
Yeah,
by the roster set.
No, it's and these are good questions. So, you know, on the Correa thing, right? So you're talking about Carlos Correa, who, you know, would I rather have had Correa over the last few years than Trevor Story? Yes, of course, because Trevor Story has given you absolutely nothing, and Carlos Correa.
I just think that they're bobos on the broadcast for trying to excuse and like, oh, this is what we've been missing, or, you know, you can't really fault them for being injured for 3 years. I could definitely, as a fan, like, not be happy with the production. And, you know, I'm not going to imagine what he could have given us for 3 years. He, you know, it's been on the Chris Sale on just the position player level.
Yeah. I mean, they're big. And you're right. The reality is you want to go to the financial side, and I know that opens up a whole can of worms. You know, Correa was getting 35 mil a year, not a shorter deal, but he was getting 35, whereas you had Story where you looked at it and it was 20-something.
I would have gladly gave him 3 years at the same amount of money that he got. You know? I know he had a couple of those deals that got, you know, washed out because of his injury.
It's not like he has been perfectly healthy, but I'll tell you what, the fewest games he's going to play in is this year, and he's played in 78 games, which is more than Trevor Story's going to play.
Do you think I still think that their management is touting the minor league system way too much. I think that they're going to be resistant to giving these guys, trading them for anybody impactful and kind of reshuffling things where it's not so left-handed heavy, not so position player heavy, and not so left-handed heavy. I don't think that they have it in them to trade these guys while they're at peak value, which is why I miss Dombrowski. Do you think that there's a chance that Duran is the odd man out?
Yes, I do. I'm not advocating for it, but yes, I really do, AJ. I think it's him or Abreu, right? And we can go into many reasons why, but I think if you want to go and trade for, you know, one of these Mariners, you know, young starters, if you want to go get a Gilbert,
I'd love to get Woo.
Or a Woo, right? Exactly. You want?
Yeah.
There are a lot of people who wouldn't be there
on the major league. You got to pay to get something, and I'm not sure that these front office has the stomach to do that. So I'm waiting with bated breath for the offseason and see how it shakes out.
The one thing I will say, about Craig Breslow, and this is a tough thing to bring up with the Grissom trade because of the way that it's turned out, but, you know, at that point we looked at it and it was like they have such a second base need. That sale trade took some cojones, and it has not worked out. But me too, at the time.
Do you think if they flip him again, being so, like, stocked up in the middle infield as it is, though, because they got some guys in AAA and they got, like, versatile pieces, do you think it's less of a loss if they wind up flipping him again for somebody?
Flipping Grissom, you're asking?
He's not going to,
I don't see it because he has no value right now. There's no value to him right now. His ceiling far exceeds what his value is on the trade market right now.
Yeah, I would have much rather them try to go from the AAA pitching prospects when they made that deal.
Yeah.
There's a plethora of them in the Braves system, but it is what it is right now.
Yeah. It's absolutely true. And AJ, thank you very much for the call. Appreciate your thoughts, as always. Just walking back to one of the things that you said earlier there about, you know, where the Red Sox are, they had to trade, they're probably not going to bring up those young guys right now. They're just probably not going to do it. It would be such a 40-man roster change at a juncture where it's very hard to do that. If they were in a situation where they were in a postseason push and they felt like one of those guys could really help, or if there was a lot more time in the season where they were out of contention as it was a couple of years ago or even last year. But I don't see it. Maybe I'm wrong, but I just don't see it. All right, let's hit a quick break here. We'll come back to you, 617-779-7937. Back in a second. It's Red Sox Review Live on WEEI.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
Red Sox Review. Live from our Red Sox studios, WEEI, Cooper Boardman with you, Jacob Lassner inside the glass. Sox win 2-1 against the Tampa Bay Rays. They get to 76-76, again, for whatever that is worth to you. You know, 617-779-7937, text line at 37937. Let's look at some texts here. And again, the sentiment here and this from 609 is one that we've talked about quite a bit. But I do think it is very much worth diving into. you know, and this person writes, why can't the Red Sox just spend money to get a pitcher and not trade a stud like Duran? Breslow's gotten fleeced, and then lists out, you know, the Garcia trade, the Zephyrjohn trade, you know, Chris Sale, Nick York, et cetera, et cetera. So let's go piece by piece there. You know, why can't the Red Sox just spend money? You know, why can't the Red Sox just spend money? That could sum up most of the calls, right? You know, I just think that, you know, that they could trade. Do you want to trade Jaren Duran? No. Is there a way to trade Jaren Duran or Willie Abreu and get legitimate big league right now value back? Absolutely. In a way that I don't think this conversation about trading the outfield really has anything to do with the financial situation that the Red Sox are in. Is them being too left-handed a result of the financial situation that they're in? Maybe. But it's just kind of the way that this cookie's crumbled. You know, like the Willier's emergence came from a trade at the deadline for Christian Vasquez that you hoped would pop and did. Jaren's emergence, you know, people forget Jaren Duran at the beginning of 2023, you know, started the year in AAA and then blossomed into what he is. You know, the Yoshida deal, sure, that's not under this current regime. You know, that's not a decision that Craig Breslow made. And so I can't really, yeah, it's hard to say that that means anything in any direction. But the idea that, you know, the outfield and this team being too left-handed, you know, is really anything more than just kind of something that has unfolded, that's what it is. And so I just think that where you're at is beyond the financial conversation is that somebody almost has to go. And I just don't, and maybe it happens on the infield, maybe it's Casas. I'm just not in that boat. But I understand that some people are. I just think that one of those left-handed bats, and all three of them have value. You know, Abreu has value. Duran has value. If you want a top-end starter, you have to trade a top-end player, right? Duran would be that. You know, but Abreu would probably get you a good pitcher, right? I mean, and again, I'm not in these rooms, but it's really about the left-handed versus the financial aspect of it. And I think it would make a lot more sense to trade a star, trade somebody like a left-handed bat, and then go and pay for a very, very good right-handed bat. Would you like to do both? Yes. Would it be nicer to trade someone of the caliber of Abreu? Yes. But I get it. I don't know. The other part of this, too, in that text is, you know, Breslow getting fleeced in pretty much all of the trades so far, quote, end quote. You know, Garcia and Zephyrjohn and Sale and Nick York and all of this. And look, the Chris Sale deal is absolutely indefensible on Wednesday, September 18th, 2024. I think even if Chris Sale gets injured next year after the restructuring of his contract and never pitches again for the Atlanta Braves, it will still be very hard to defend because of what has happened in 2024. And it is, of course, the punchline that was hit when I did the show in December. And we said, well, you know, what if Chris Sale goes to Atlanta and wins the Cy Young? Well, we're getting, you know, our answer to all of that. And Vaughn Grissom's been at AAA and all of that. And look, I believe in Vaughn in the long term. I think he's shown a lot down there. But Chris Sale is winning the Cy Young. There's really just no way around that. So that's part one. But I'm not going to pretend that I'm the genius here. Like, I'm not going to pretend that when that deal went down, I didn't like it. You know, it was Craig Breslow, you know, ridding himself of something that had been hanging over the team over the last couple of years with Chris Sale's injuries, something that had been just this awful. I mean, we talked about it constantly. I'm not going to forget these conversations in June and July and August and September of 2023. And when he did the deal, it was like, all right, let's just get something, get some value for a hole that needed to be plugged at the time. And then Vaughn Grissom's injuries completely derailed his season. You know, Nick York, I'm sorry. Like, I get it. I love Nick, like, as a, personally. Like, I he was great in Worcester. That deal, like, anybody writing that deal right now, I'm sorry. Like, stop. Just stop. Like, they got a good-looking pitching prospect in Quinn Priester, who is, and I really do mean this, and he was, you know, again, he got to the big leagues. He is 1,000 times better right now, 1,000 being strong. He is a much better pitcher right now on September 18th than he was on July 31st because of the process the Red Sox have put him through pitching development-wise. And the Red Sox have added legitimate, what you've seen from Richard Fitz over these, you know, two starts and what you'll see on Friday night, that process is unfolding with Quinn Priester right now. They're doing that with him right now. So, I you know, check back on me on that one, but I don't know. The Nick York trade thing is a little ridiculous to me. You know, he really struggled at AA despite the underlying numbers. You know, he had a really good month at AAA, and they flipped him for a guy that they thought could be, you know, a good young starter and still can be. I have zero issue with that. I have zero, you know, I have a lot of issues with writing the autopsy on that trade on September 18th, 2024. What if they brought up Zephyr, John? Yeah. You know, the Angels deals, right? The Garcia deal, you know, with Cavadas and Lugo and Zephyr, John, were really a 40-man roster conversation. You know, you're in a situation where if you want to have Anthony Meyer, Teal, Campbell at the big league level in 2025 at any point, and and those guys are also, some of them are approaching the 40-man add with the Rule 5 coming, and the Red Sox were facing among the largest 40-man roster rule crunches possible. You were not going to be able to add most of those guys to the 40-man roster, and that's why they made the trade that they did. And just where the organization is at. And so they tried to get something for him. It didn't work out. I wish it had been better. I wish Sims had been better, and obviously he's been injured, and so and apparently he came over with something, probably. So it's hard to, you know, maybe fully put that deal into the right perspective. But, you know, again, Salen Grissom is damning, right? The Paxton deal is damning. Danny Jansen is damning. The results of Sims and Garcia are damning. That's bad. But Verdugo for Richard Fitz and Greg Weissert, that looks pretty good. Justin Slayton's Rule 5 trade, you know, they didn't pick him, but they traded for him, looks great. Mets would kill to have that guy in their bullpen right now. Tyler O'Neill for Victor Santos and Nick Robertson. They got 31 home runs out of Victor Santos and Nick Robertson. That's unbelievable. You know, Cooper Criswell on a 1 year, $1 million. It's not all bad. And I think people paint that picture about Craig Breslow's early decisions. I am not trying to wash over what the Chris Sale deal has become. I'm not trying to wash over, you know, what all of those other ones that I listed have done. Zephyr John in the big leagues right now, I'd love to see it in a Red Sox uniform. I mean, the way that he was throwing the ball at AAA, you know, but they promoted Luis Guerrero. Guerrero theoretically has that spot, 40-man or otherwise. But, you know, I think you will see an overhaul of the bullpen in the offseason. That will be telling about how you judge Craig Breslow. I think you will see a major trade in some capacity. That will be telling about Craig Breslow. And everything beyond that will be a financial conversation that we've had a million times before. But I appreciate the text because it's again, your points are good. Like, I don't disagree. It's just, you know, again, it's not as simple as he's gotten fleeced. I don't see it that way. But I understand why you would. But I don't see it that way. With, you know, again, Verdugo, Slayton, O'Neill, Criswell. Like, there's still good here. And the other part of it, too, and I will just say this, and again, it does not excuse Sale. The results are bad there right now. But I think if you look at, you know, walking into this offseason, the needs of this team and, you know, the decisions that need to be made, one of the biggest gripes in 2023 and 2022, I read the text and took the phone calls, you know, was about Craig Breslow or Chaim Bloom not doing enough, right? And that was ultimately probably what ended his time here. Just not enough. And you have a general manager here, a decision maker here, I should say, in Craig Breslow, that is willing to make is willing to do it. You know, people looked at the trade deadline as he didn't do anything. I think that's wrong. I think that based on the situation and the hand that he was dealt and the prospect capital in the organization, he traded about everything he possibly could without mortgaging everything, without touching one of the top four prospects that you believe are going to be cornerstones and pillars of the future. He traded away 40-man, you know, guys that were about to be in a 40-man roster crunch and some lower-level guys and some guys that maybe he didn't believe in as much as the previous regime for whatever reason. And when you look at that, he's kind of at this point in the first year, and we all want things to happen fast. And you know what? 76-76 is not good enough, right? And he has said so. Alex Cora has said so. I have said so. We have all, you know, everyone knows that. And this team, barring some kind of miracle, is not going to make the playoffs. But you do have a... I just think that when you actually dive into the deals and you dive into an intelligent conversation about the roster and the state of the organization in 2024, that he has been more aggressive than people give him credit for. And whatever that means is what it means, but the promotion of Nick York was aggressive from AA based on what he was doing at AA. They got a good month out of him, and they traded him while the going was hot, and they got Quinn Priester out of it. And they believe in Quinn Priester, and that's where the pitching development intersects. That's the other part of this, too. You know, what they are doing from a pitching development perspective is happening in this organization. What they have revamped in this organization is so important. And it won't be important tomorrow, and it hasn't been, although it's been important to 76-76. It's been important for Hauk and Crawford and their starts and Hauk's finish. It's been important for a guy like Slayton. It's been important for a guy like Luis Guerrero. Shoot, it's been important for Richard Fitz, who's going to challenge for a rotation spot coming into camp next year. You know, they have truly created a situation where they are making pitchers better here, which was not the case over the last few years to this extent. It just wasn't, you know, and again, you need to look no further than the conversations that we had all off season long on this show with you about fill in the blank starting pitcher that you wanted on the open market. I mean, remember the Jordan Montgomery conversation? It's just one of those things where, you know, I look at what they have done in the starting pitching department, this has become a place where starting pitchers are going to want to come. I think you'll see that in the offseason if they're willing to spend. I think you'll see that. And so, again, you know, I can say all these wonderful things and all these positive things about this team or about this organization, the direction it's going in. It doesn't change what the texter says. And that is Paxton. That is Sale. That is Danny Jansen. That is what happened with Sims and Garcia. That didn't work out. And it will be, I mean, there will be, there's no doubt. And I thought the Boston Globe article with Alex Speer, great article, with him and Craig Breslow talking about, you know, what he would like back, that there are things that he would like back. I think he'd like those things back. And you know what? It happens. But I think that there is a legitimate level of aggression here. Texter asks, what about the Mickey Gasper rule? Five picks seemed a good, you know, take from the Yankees. Didn't flash for the big team. I mean, 12 at-bats or 15 at-bat, 15 plate appearances, 12 at-bats. It was a minor league rule five pick that started in AA. They got to the big leagues. Like, you know, he never got a chance to play over significant time at the big league level. That was a good pick, not a bad one. There are 29 other teams that wish they had made that pick, or 28 other teams that wish they had made that pick because of the way that he hit a AAA. He didn't play for the big league team. He didn't play. He went from playing every day at a AAA level, being the best hitter in the league for 3 months, to not playing. He had 15 plate appearances. I'm not gonna pass judgment in any way, good or bad, on him. On that. All right, 617-779-7937, text line at 37937. Cooper Boardman with you. We're up until 11 tonight on Red Sox Review. Again, 37937, we're on the text line hard tonight with all of you. Red Sox beat the Rays 2-1. They get to 76 and 76. I will just take 1 second and walk you through the night for the Red Sox here. And, you know, this really starts with Tanner Houck. And I was genuinely, and I'm not Tanner Houck's shoulder, so I don't know how he feels. But I was genuinely surprised that he didn't, that he started this game. I'm almost surprised that they didn't shut him down. But obviously he's in a place where he's all right. And he was pumping 96 tonight over four innings. You know, really the toughest task that he ran into was in the second inning. Josh Lowe doubles. He hits Johnny DeLuca with a pitch, gets a strikeout, and that brought Taylor Walls to the plate, and Taylor Walls did this to give the Rays the lead.
For the second straight day, Mike Yastrzemski hit a leadoff home run.
There's a line drive, it's softly in the left, it drops for a base, it's going to score a run. O'Neill looks at the plate and puts it in toward third. A light hitting Taylor Walls drives in his 14th run of the season, scoring Josh Lowe, and it's 1-0 Tampa Bay.
And at that point, you're sitting there like, oh my gosh, like, are you going to score? 14 strikeouts on the night, 12 against Ryan Pepiot. Ryan Pepiot throws an immaculate inning in the fifth inning. Think about it this way. What happened tonight has happened just 116 times in the history of baseball. The fifth against the Boston Red Sox, first since 2021. Remember, Michael King did it for the Yankees against the Red Sox. You know, so you're in a spot where, you know, you're down 1-0. You're not doing anything offensively. And I just continue to go back to every time I write Trevor Story's name on my lineup card. And, you know, what you make of Trevor Story is so hard. There's one thing that's absolutely true, is that you're stuck with him, right? Like, he's not going anywhere. You know, could you see, like, Yoshida getting offloaded in the offseason? Absolutely. And just eating the money, essentially, just because of the roster spot that he is plugging up? Totally. Is Trevor Story going anywhere? I would be absolutely staggered if that were the case. And so you sit here and you ask the question that was asked when he came to Boston, which was, is he Trevor Story, the guy that had the first 5-6 years in Colorado, you know, where he was, you know, 120, 125, 130 WRC plus guy? Or is he, you know, the version of him that we saw in 2021? Well, tonight, in the sixth inning, right after that immaculate inning, he was the former against the Rays at the Trop tonight.
Pepio winds, he throws, and Trevor drills one high and deep into left field. It is back, and it is gone! Trevor Story ties the game with a missile into the seats in left. He's turning a corner, and we're tied at one.
Very loud contact. 394 feet. I'm out of here in a hurry.
A little bit different than the previous inning. Trevor is really starting to look comfortable. You hear the Red Sox fans here for the first time.
That you did. And, you know, you look at this season for the Red Sox and offensively what they have done, or really what they have not done. And, you know, as I pull it up here in front of me, the Red Sox got a 755 OPS from their shortstops. And, you know, it's funny, like, you look around at the teams that are in the playoffs right now, you know, Bobby Witt Jr. would be the MVP if a man named Aaron Judge did not exist. He is, you know, they have the league leader in shortstop OPS. Baltimore is going to get there and probably in the top wild card spot with Gunnar Henderson. The Mets are going to be there or have at least pushed their way there with Frankie Lindor. You know, you look at the Dodgers and what Mookie has provided there when he's been physically capable of playing defense and healthy there, but they've got an 835 OPS out of their shortstops. You know, you look at Minnesota, you look at Milwaukee, you look at Philadelphia. These are the teams that OPS-wise are getting the most production out of their guys at shortstop. The Red Sox don't need that. Red Sox don't need all of that. They don't need Trevor Story to be Bobby Witt and Gunnar Henderson and on and on and on. But they do need something. And what he gave them tonight and what he gave them in the eighth inning is exactly what they need. The infield single. He steals second. He steals third. And with the game tied at one in the top of the eighth inning, Jarren Duran in the box, it was a chance to drive Trevor home.
Here's the 0-2 pitch again. And he grounds it hard by the diving first baseman into right field. Story scores. The Red Sox lead 2-1. Hard hit ball off the bat of Jarren Duran as he breaks an 0-for-9, driving in his 73rd run. The infield's back. That might have been an out.
Yep, and that's a run created entirely by Trevor Story.
It was. And again, I don't know what you're going to get out of Trevor Story, but I know he's going to be a right-handed bat who's going to play good defense, and I think he's going to give you, you know, relative league average. And anything beyond that will be just desserts, assuming that he is healthy. So we'll see. But there's legitimate fatigue when you talk about him, and understandably so. All right, text line 37937, phone line 617-779-7937. Step aside, come back, get you set up for tomorrow and the weekend right here on Red Sox Review on WEEI. Not dead. There's something. Red Sox Review live with you, Cooper Boardman here. Jake Lasner inside the glass, 617-779-7937, 617-779-7937, text line. At 37937, 2-1 the final tonight, 76-76, 4 out from Minnesota after they lose. So, again, we'll spend some time talking about playoff stuff when it becomes real. And maybe it'll be tomorrow night after the game. Twins lose tomorrow, Red Sox win tomorrow, you'd be 3 out with 3 games against the Twins Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. You'd then have the Tigers and Mariners to deal with in that conversation, but, you know, we'll see. All right, you heard the highlight there that came to you earlier on from the Nissan postgame show. And at Nissan, you deserve a car that thrills you. And Nissan's got an exciting full line that'll put goosebumps on your goosebumps. Experience the thrill for yourself and shop your local Nissan store, NissanUSA.com today. All right, let's get back to the phones now, 617-779-7937. And let's go back to New Hampshire. We're just hitting the whole Granite State tonight. Matt, you are on the air. Welcome to Red Sox Review.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
All good.
So my cousin, he's a huge prospect guy. He's always, like, he can tell you, like, the top 100 prospects, and he's always telling me these, like, bold takes of the Red Sox. He told me one tonight, and I really, really hope that it's not true. He thinks that Zach Kelly is going to be the closer to start the year next year, and I just really hope that's not the truth because there's not – many guys I can't stand more than Zach Kelly.
No, I don't think that's going to be the case. I don't think that's going to be the case. Just to be clear, if I had to stake my claim right now, I don't think he's going to be the closer. I don't know, but I don't think so.
And then one last thing. So I called last night, and I was the one talking about Alex Cora and how if he could get fired next year.
Sure.
And I brought up John Farrell. I wasn't comparing them. And then the guy in the glass was saying that, oh, that's the biggest disrespect to compare those two. So then it got me thinking, and I went on there. So John Farrell was the coach for 4 years, and I believe this is Cora's fifth or sixth. Farrell has a higher winning percentage. I get it. They spent money back then. But Cora won with probably the greatest Red Sox team of all time. Farrell won with a team that probably the lowest out of the World Series teams.
It's not like that team wasn't good.
No, I get that, but I mean, who was it? You had Ortiz. It was Ortiz, and then like Napoli, Johnny Gomes.
Well, that's Pedroia. That's Pedroia MVP. That's Johnny Gomes. That's Jacoby Ellsbury, like prime Jacoby. That's unreal Saltalamacchia.
Trust me. I think Alex Cora is a great manager, but it just got me thinking. It's like if you had to pick like the best thing that he's been like. He won the one World Series. He brought the team to the ALCS. Other than that, he hasn't done anything.
Yeah. Well, and I totally get it. First of all, he's been to an ALCS. He completely overachieved that team in 2021, to be honest about it, right? I just think the organizations are in a completely different position, right? And if the narrative is in 2024, there's been too much turnover, you know, I just think that what they did with John Farrell and what they did, you know, Radicky, I guess, is kind of its own other thing. But after Tito got let go, you had the 1 year of Valentine, right? And then you had a little bit of Farrell. You had a little bit of Cora. You know, you're in a spot now where there's just been too much turnover. And I think that if John Farrell was the manager I really do mean this. Like, if John Farrell had retaken over the managerial job in 2021 and he was in Alex Cora's seat from 21 to 2024, he probably wouldn't be fired after this year, right?
But, you know, I agree. And like, I honestly, it bugs me because I can't stand Farrell. Like, I hated every second of it. But it just got me thinking, and it's just like, I don't know, I kind of just feel like they need that new face in there. And it's not because of what Cora's done. It's just like, I mean, Francona was great, but every once in a while that team just needs to get rid of, like even the Giants with Bruce Bochy, like you gotta start over somewhere.
Yeah,
I feel like this is the time. But
I don't think the reason why I don't think so is because you have a young core that came up under him that loves him and trusts him. You get rid of him, you're completely blowing that up.
Yeah, I agree. And that's another thing that I hope that the Red Sox end up doing this year. And I'll get off the phone after this. But they need that. It doesn't have to be a stud hitter. They do need one of those. But they need one of those veteran presence. Like, you need that in the clubhouse. You need, like the Steve Pierce, or you need the Johnny Gomes. Like, not that they're great on the field. They just know what to do, when to do it. Like, you can hit 210 all year, but you get up in that game one of the playoffs and you move the runner over, or you hit the ball into the gap and it starts a whole rally. It's just something they need that.
Yeah, and Matt,
No,
appreciate your call. And you know who I think that is? And again, I'm not saying that they don't need to bring somebody else in for that. The answer is Trevor Story, man. Like, to actually have him on the team. You know, that's the answer. You know, you can point to so many things about this team being too left-handed, about the defense being as awful as it's been. And having a guy in the lineup like tonight where, you know, he comes through, gives you an infield single in the eighth inning. It's like a nothing swing, but gets on base. He recognizes that the only way on earth that the Red Sox are going to score against the Rays bullpen the way that they're hitting right now is if he steals second and he steals third and he finds a way to do it. That's the difference, right? Like, that's what he could mean to this team. But you're right, they need a star too. But I appreciate the thought. Last thing, and that music means we got to get on out of here, but, you know, Farrell's firing in 2017 was about a team that was underachieving, that brass, I think, felt like could go and win a year later, and then they did. You know, that was the same. That was Vasquez and Bogarts and Benintendi and obviously Rafi and Mookie and JBJ and Hanley Ramirez, right? 2017? Yeah, had to be. And you know, that's a much, much different place than where this team is right now. But it's a fun little thought exercise there. All right, we really got to get out of here. Huge, huge, huge thanks to Jacob Lassner, Inside the Glass. Great stuff all night. I'm Cooper Boardman. We'll talk to you tomorrow, 5:50 pre, 6:50 first pitch, Red Sox review after the game, then Six Rings, all that. But that's it for us tonight. Red Sox review on WEEI.